This episode is brought to you by CBS All Access. If you don't already subscribe to CBS All Access, please use our affiliate link by going to talkthroughmedia.com/CBS. Using our affiliate link gives us a little credit, which helps us to keep bringing you great content. U.S. residents only.
Hello, and welcome to episode 3 of the Star Trek Picard cast. I'm Brian.
And I'm Ruthie.
And we will be covering the final short trek of season 2 of the short treks titled Children of Mars. Before we get started, I'm going to explain why I said it so tentatively that it's the Star Trek Picard cast this episode. We have a little bit of housekeeping. I mentioned on the last episode of the Star Trek Picard cast that those episodes would only appear on the Star Trek Picard cast feed and the all-inclusive feed, of course, but not the Discovery feed. And if you are hearing this on the Discovery feed, you have to think, because a few days after it was released on the Picard cast, I released the second episode of the Picard cast on the Discovery feed. And the reason for it is right away, as soon as I released that second episode, I noticed a very sharp, like a big decline in downloads from the first episode of the Picard cast. And I went back, and of course that episode was released on the both feeds, and I did a poll of the listeners that are on our Facebook group just to get an idea of like how many people have added the Picard feed to their podcast clients. And most of you who responded said that they had, but there were some of you that were like, what feed? What are you talking about? And I was just like, that tells me that there's something wrong here. And I had already noticed the decline. So we talked it over and I made a change, and it's a permanent change. It's basically what it is all of the Picard podcast episodes will automatically be on the Discovery feed by default. So in other words, if you're listening to us on the Discovery podcast feed, you don't have to add the Picard cast feed. And if you're on the all-inclusive feed, it doesn't matter. It didn't affect you at all. But I just wanted to make, so now basically the Picard cast, you can hear that on 3 separate feeds. And we just wanted to make it easy for people to listen to us. And originally, you know, segregating them, I don't think it was going to be a good idea. So, you know, we talked it over. I actually talked to the owner of our old network, Daryl, about it just to get his take on it. And it seemed just the right thing to do, which is to reverse the decision and make all of these episodes available on the Discovery podcast feed as well as the Picard cast feed. Anyway, what does this mean to you? You're just going to keep listening to this. And that's why this one, which is tied to the Picard show, we are calling the Picard cast episode 3 as opposed to Discovery podcast episode 48. So, and because we want to stick to 47 as long as we can. No, not that part.
So to make a short story long, that's why you're hearing it on this feed.
Exactly. All right. And before we get started, we have some feedback for our last episode. It was actually of the Star Trek Discovery podcast, episode 47. And that was for Ephraim and Dot and the girl who made the stars. Let's open hailing frequencies. And just as a note, I had to record this out of order. So that's why you're not going to hear Ruthie on these two pieces of feedback. But she did get a chance to read it. I just don't have her feedback on it. All right. So first off is Daniel from the UK. He says, just finished. Great discussion. I really hope we get Guinan or Q as the outsider characters who can offer the proverbial angel / devil on his shoulder. But I'd be interested in obscure callbacks, his fake son, Jason, in Bloodlines, for instance. Ahead of the episode about Picard himself, I think the best thing about him is that he embodies an idea of rational justice and morality. He isn't a passive commenter. He actively lives his beliefs, but balances his choices against compelling evidence or advice and doesn't rush in without checking his assumptions. He is the person we all wish to be, which is why it's compelling, i.e. First Contact, when he loses that rationality and perhaps has lost his way a little in this upcoming show. Bloodlines. That is an episode that I haven't thought of in a very long time. What I would call an episode that really is all that memorable, but I do recall it, but it's been a long time since I've seen it, and I haven't gotten to it since in my rewatch. At the time that we're going through this, I am about a season and a half behind on that, so I'm at season 6, episode 13, Ship in a Bottle. And whether or not I'm going to make it to the final episode by the time Picard airs, I think at this point is doubtful. But anyway, yeah, so that's an interesting choice, though. We also got feedback from James the Augmented Sailor, and he says, Brian, if they kill off Beverly Crusher in this show, I'm holding you personally responsible for jinxing her by mentioning that as a what if. I was aghast that you would put forward such a notion. I will definitely Beverly to the last breath. I mean, she was my crush on the show as a kid, so I've got to do it. Now that that's out of the way, great cast, guys. As you can probably tell, I'm hoping that they've kept a Crusher appearance a huge secret from the public, and her and I could die a happy man if she and Jean-Luc were together. I also really want to see a surprise appearance from Worf. He's my favorite too, Ruthie. It would be such redemption against Fuller's debacle to have him appear and to have him appear looking correct too. I can't wait for the Patreon call in tomorrow, guys. Talk at you then. Yeah, we talk a little bit more about that later on in the episode. So, yeah, I mean, I brought it up, and I wasn't really serious about that, but I hope that they are going to have her in the episode in there, but when we recorded this was before seeing this short track. So my thoughts about her being dead, I think, are less so now that we see more of the story. And yeah, I don't think she's going to die. So anyway. Children of Mars is written by three people, actually, Kirsten Beyer, Jenny Lumet, and Alex Kurtzman. And the two of them, Kirsten Beyer and Alex Kurtzman, are two of the co-creators of Star Trek Picard. So, and directed by Mark Pellington, who also directed the first short track of this season, Q&A. And it was noted a couple of things. One thing I have in here, one thing I don't, is that it said created by Akiva Goldsman and Michael Chabon and Kirsten Beyer and Alex Kurtzman. Now, in the past, that did not show that. It showed the Discovery created by. So that is partially why I bring this up. And I had also noted in the credits, it said based upon Star Trek The Next Generation created by Gene Roddenberry, not based upon Star Trek created by Gene Roddenberry. Interesting.
Okay.
So the description is as follows from CBS.com. 12-year-old classmates Kima and Lil find themselves at odds with each other on a day that will change their lives forever. The air date of January 9th, 2020. So, and let's move on to ratings. So, Ruthie, what did you think of Children of Mars?
I really liked it. I'm going to give it an arbitrary 9 out of 10.
And I am going to apply the suspense here. And say 9.75 out of 10, Rogue Synths Attack Mars.
It's a trap!
All right. Okay, we got some other ratings. Go ahead, Ruthie, with the first one.
All right, James the Augmented Sailor says, Children of Mars hits hard and hits fast. My favorite short of all shorts. 10 Bowie covers out of 10.
Yeah, I would agree with that, James. I had a similar reaction. I thought that this was the most hard-hitting and my favorite, I think, of the short treks to date. Fred from the Netherlands, he was not as high on it. He gave it 8 out of 10 school bus rides.
All right. LT from NC says, I'm giving this one 9 out of 10 Vulcan principles because, come on, no one else will use that one.
I think you're right. Clint from Indianapolis said 9 out of 10 Mrs. K drawings.
All right. And Rick from Cleveland says, I greatly enjoyed this short trek and rank it 9 out of 10 Gene Simmons tongues. That was funny. All right.
All right. So let's move on to our yeses.
Yes.
Okay. We only got two that I guess we could consider listener yeses. Fred from the Netherlands says, nice to see a 23rd century school setting. Some of it reminds me of one of the buildings on our university campus in Rotterdam. And just to, well, it's a bit of a segue into what we're going to talk about, but this is, of course, the 24th century, not the 23rd.
Good times. James, the Augmented Sailor, says, Picard short and sets the table for the show.
I agree. All right, Ruthie, what did you have for yeses?
I really liked the lack of dialogue, honestly. I think sometimes you don't necessarily need words. And I guess this was one of those cases. Because it kind of, I mean, it shows the ability of the filmmakers, I guess, if you will, their ability to express things without needing to say it outright.
Right.
I guess. And that was, it's always nice when people do things like that. So.
Yes, I totally agree with that. And I think that segues into the yes that I was going to give. I don't know if you have more, but I'll just say this just because it segues perfectly into it. I love the music in this short track. And I think that the experimentation that we're seeing on the short tracks was evident in this particular short track. And it did remind me a little bit, say, of Calypso in the way it experimented here. but specifically, like you said, the lack of dialogue, but also the music and the way that the music was in this short track. And of course, you know, we get at the start, it starts off and basically the first half of the short track. Oh, it's actually more if you don't consider the credits. But the first, you know, big portion of it was with Peter Gabriel doing a cover of David Bowie's Heroes. And that's a particularly haunting version, I think, of that one. And then even as much as I love that, I'd say even more so, Jeff Russo's, you know, original orchestration that he uses both on the latter half of the short track, you know, like the portion after it's revealed what is happening on Mars, and it segues into the music that is playing in the credits. Every time that I've watched this short track, and I didn't say that initially, but I'll say it now, I've watched this short track 18 times. I think I liked it. Either that, or I have a screw loose.
An obsessive personality, maybe.
Yes. Well, we know that. But anyway, this definitely spoke to me. And the sadness of that piano arrangement that Jeff Russo does in this, I thought it was beautiful. It was haunting. And it 18 times, every single time when we got to that music, I started crying. And I don't know what's wrong with me. But I did love this particular one. I would not say that it's perfect. We'll get into some things that I didn't like so much about it. Some of them are nitpicky. But I'll just say that nitpicking Brian is, he's on a timeout this week.
That's funny.
Yeah. Do you have any more yeses?
Not especially, except for I just wanted to reiterate I also really, really enjoyed the music. Peter Gabriel is always a go-to for me. Mm. And I love that version, I guess, of that song. Honestly, I didn't know that was a cover. I think the first time I ever heard that song was probably the Peter Gabriel.
Yeah, and I believe it was featured in Stranger Things as well. I know it didn't come out for that.
Peter Gabriel song?
The Peter Gabriel version of Heroes was in Stranger Things.
Hmm.
So you're
probably right.
When I looked it up, I looked up on YouTube, it actually mentions it on the YouTube song, which it has Peter Gabriel's name in the channel, so I'm pretty sure it's right that it was in Stranger Things. So I totally agree with that. It evoked a 9/11 tone for me. 9/11 was, you know, I think most of us who were around for 9/11, kind of, it's one of those moments where you vividly remember what you're doing and what was going on that day when you heard about the planes hitting the towers and all that. And it evoked that memory in me. At the time, I had only been in the U.S., living in the U.S. for a year, and I'd kind of made a conscious decision to, you know, make this my home. And I was living in Jacksonville, Florida at the time, and kind of alone from, you know, all my friends and family. And that was a particularly sad day for me. And yeah, as it was, I think, for billions of people.
Not well, just I don't me. Know about billions, but
certainly
a lot.
Millions. Yeah. Yeah. Certainly a large part of, you know, Western culture, I think, were affected by that. Anyway, so it reminded me of that. And, you know, originally I had this thing where I don't particularly like movies or TV that feature angsty teens. And, you know, these are kind of angsty, I don't know, 12-year-olds or whatever. But by the end, I was very much empathetic to what was happening with them. Felt really terrible for, you know, their loss. And so anyway, so it was that. Also say I loved seeing, you know, even though it was very short and you, if you blinked, you probably missed it, seeing Picard as an admiral and a senior one at that, you know, like being pressed for comment on the tragedy. Normally they wouldn't just go to any regular officer. He would have to be someone in charge for them to seek comment for that. And of course, the other thing that you have to bring up, and I brought it up in my rating, rogue synths attack Mars. Which, if you weren't noticing it, it played on the monitors. Like when you saw, you know, the broadcasts, I won't say TV because it's obviously not TV in 2385 or whatever it is. But but certainly whatever's being broadcast, you see the crawl showing rogue synth attack Mars. And what's a rogue synth? We'll have to talk about that in a minute because some other people asked that question. But it certainly does, I think, play into Picard. And I think that was kind of the tie in there, because other than that, the things that you see, it could have just as easily been 23rd century as it is 24th century. But yeah, I loved it. So you have anything else you want to say in that regard?
Nope.
Okay.
It was super short. So
well,
you pretty much covered it.
That goes into the next part. Our nose.
No!
I just watched that episode recently, so.
Oh, yeah, you did.
Just brings back fond memories again. It was such a good episode. It's one of my favorites.
Yes. So to that, speaking of shortness, James, the augmented sailor, says, "So short." And yes, that's what I would say too, because, you know, this is another one that had about 2 minutes of end credits. So the story was done, you know, about 6 minutes, 45 seconds or so into it. So it was short. And I don't know why the last four of the short treks have been so short. They're advertised as being 10 to 15 minutes, and all of the last four have been under 10 minutes. So, boo.
Fred, his no is holding hands at the end after teasing each other so much and even fight, but a bit unlikely, even how devastating it is what they see.
Well, I'm going to assume that they both know that each of them has a parent that is working on Mars. And I think that they instantly know what's what once they see each other's reaction. So I think based on that, it's a shared tragedy that brings them together. You know, whether or not they'll stay together and stay friends after that, I hope so.
And maybe they realize that they were kind of squabbling over dumb things.
And, you know, let's face it, I think especially, and I have to point the finger at Lil for being the instigator in this.
I honestly have no idea which one is which.
Lil is the human girl, and Kima is the alien who, I don't know what alien that is. I think that's a new alien. I didn't recognize it. I haven't seen it mentioned anywhere of anyone else.
Maybe we should say non-human, because technically the human could be an alien to the non-human girl. So,
well, then again, every sentient species is an alien on Mars. So, mm-hmm. And they're not on Mars. Let's be the two girls are actually living in San Francisco, because there's one picture in there where we see the Golden Gate Bridge and that. So they're actually in San Francisco. I don't know if that's where the school is, but where they live is in San Francisco. So LT from NC has a couple, and he says, I have two distinct no bits for this one, and they are not super huge ones. I want to know what started the girls butting heads like that. It is one part of the story that just makes me curious. And I think that's, to me, what it is. They're acting out because of them they're lonely, and especially in the case of Lil, I think probably her relationship with her father wasn't so great. It seemed like Kima had a better relationship with her mother. They seemed more friendly, and she seemed more happy talking to her mom, whereas Lil talking to her dad, her dad seemed very nervous when he was talking to her. There's one part where he says, like, you know, there's a lot going on over here. And it's kind of like a very nervous thing to say.
Really? My impression was that he was acting that way because he couldn't come visit her, I guess. I think she was feeling the lack of his presence and was upset about it. And he was kind of like, I can't really do anything about that right now. Whether he felt bad about that or not, whether or not he, you know, it was one of those like things. I think it was just kind of, I mean, I couldn't really tell whether or not he was like, I'm sorry, I'm just busy. Or if he was like, I'm sorry, I can't right now, more upset about not being able to visit her. You know what I mean? She was clearly upset about him not being able to spend time with her. Mm-hmm. And I think my impression of their butting heads, I kind of felt like maybe Lil didn't really realize that. I mean, I don't know that she necessarily bumped into her and knocked her down on purpose.
That is a good question to bring up, because I kind of went back and forth on this each time that I watched it, whether or not.
Well, I only watched it once, and so my perspective is not quite as detailed. But I feel like maybe she was just rushing by and didn't realize it, but that kind of caused a chain of events. Like, maybe she was in her own little world because she's upset about her father and the reaction with her dad. So,
yeah,
of course, this caused the, you know, missed bus, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. And that, to me, started the problem, but I could not tell after watching it, you know, 18 times. And I said, I went back and forth on it, whether or not hitting Kima like that was intentional or if it was accidental. And I think it could be either way, but probably accidental. But I think also,
I guess the reason why I thought it was accidental was because when she was, I feel like the whole thing was accidental, honestly, because she didn't understand why Kima was giving her side eye. She was like, what? And so she drew the picture of the teacher and sent it to her as in trying to make friends, but it got her in trouble. Also accident. She wasn't intending to send that picture to her so that she would get caught right then. She was just trying to, like, I guess, sort of like join with me in making fun of our teacher kind of a thing. And because she wasn't really understanding why she was upset with her, I guess. She didn't understand the ramifications of, she might not have even realized that she knocked into her. So, and then, I mean, I guess it comes a certain point in time where you're like, all right, you want to fight? Let's fight.
Well, that was the question that I had. There was the Mrs. K drawing intentional. And that whole thing is actually in my nose, which we'll get to in a minute. But that part of it, it is actually, there's a part of this that I was going to bring up too, that LT brings up in his last point. So I'm going to bring this up right now, his last point. He says, the other one is just my personal baggage as a former school bus driver. I know that the getting left bit serviced the plot, but the first thing I had to do on a pickup was count heads. And I thought to myself, that bugged me a little bit too, like, just a bit though. But I wondered, it's like, wouldn't they know that Kima had been delayed? Like, was the force field and all that like automatic, or was, you know, maybe even the shuttle bus was
automated? So in other words, there's not an actual bus driver to count heads.
Yeah, that was the funny thing, because I thought,
I mean, that kind of makes sense. Like, they don't necessarily recognize if there's, but at the same time, if it's automated, you would think that they could program butts in seats and know if one is not there.
Right.
But I don't know how they would do that. I mean, she obviously got to school. So I'm like, was there a second bus or something? I mean, she got there. She was just late.
Yeah. Either a second bus or a second, you know, she found another method of transportation. I assume that, you know, they're not beaming all over the place. I mean, she was able to beam over there, it wouldn't have been an issue. But then again, like, we don't actually know if the school is in San Francisco. We know they're in San Francisco, but I don't think it was formally established that the school itself was in San Francisco. So,
right. That's kind of what I was thinking. Yeah. I was like, they're going somewhere. And if they're taking a shuttlecraft, it seems like the school is not like around the block.
Yeah. I mean, it's not like today. So, like, if there
could be, I mean, the school could be on the moon for all we know.
Or on Mars, but I don't think so.
It wasn't on Mars, because they also would have been experiencing probably some kind of ramifications of the attack.
We would have seen some rogue synths.
Yeah, something. So we can probably safely bet that the only place the school is not is Mars.
Yeah. So anyway, that was my take on it. It did bug me a bit, but then again, I don't think that part of it is really the major thing that, like, there is a no that I know certain people are going to bring up that I'm not going to bring up in my nose, but that's because I've sent nitpicking Brian to a timeout.
And thank goodness.
We'll get to that, because it drives me crazy that some people have made an exception about this short trek. What do you have for nose?
I don't have anything.
Okay. Strangely low tech. I'll give you an example. There are combination locks in the lockers. I thought, wouldn't they have gotten rid of this by now? Combination locks? You'd think it would be some kind of pad, you know, like we have in next gen.
Maybe.
Yeah.
I mean, I kind of feel like, I don't know. It seems like maybe certain aspects of school would survive 300 years. And maybe having that kind of a lock is one of them. I don't know.
Yeah, like, I did notice that they had uniforms. And by the way, I didn't mention in my yeses, because I don't know if it's really a yes, but I'll mention it here. Did you notice
that it's a no? You don't know if it's really a yes, but it's a no?
No. No, this part is not really a no. They had uniforms, and I had noticed that the uniform was different than the typical uniform you see these days. Most of the time, you still see them wearing skirts for, you know, and sometimes like shirt and tie, or they have at least ties on for males. But they had on like a pantsuit, but the color jacket was a monster maroon, like in the movies. That red color, like the Star Trek 2 to Star Trek 6 jacket.
Well, at least they're not wearing skin tight jumpsuits.
Yeah, definitely. LT brought up a point on the missed bus. The point that I had on the missed bus was, it didn't seem like there had been enough time for Kima to pick up her things and pick up the bag to miss the bus. Like, it seemed like there were mere seconds, and somehow in mere seconds, she missed the bus. Like, it seemed very quick for them to get past the force field and get on the shuttle, and the shuttle door close and it take off. Like, it didn't seem like enough time had passed.
Yeah, I think maybe they kind of
shortened it.
Yeah. I was going to say, maybe they kind of sped that up a little bit. I can see her getting to, I mean, the force field is apparent because once something is launching, you don't want to be too close, right?
Right.
So I can see that happening quickly because it seems like the time between her getting there and the launch was kind of quick, but I can see the force field being up quicker than the actual launch. So maybe the time between the force field and the launch was kind of quick. I don't know, but I don't know.
The other thing I was going to bring up, and again, these are really small things, but the Mrs. K drawing, I would think in 2385 or 2386, that's my projected time. I'll get more into that in a minute. So Lil sends the file to Kima, and then Mrs. K, the teacher, picks up the file and then assigns Kima two demerits or whatever it is, like, you know, no holodeck for you, whatever it is, two demerit points for, or two detention hours. Or I don't know what it is, whatever, for that. But Mrs. K, can't you like see the file history on the file to see that file came from Lil?
I mean, not necessarily.
There should be an IP address or some like.
Come on now. Exit. You're being seriously. She walked by her desk and saw it.
That's what I'm saying though. Like even in a JPEG, there's a little tag in the JPEG that tells you what I think it's what the MAC address or the IP or through something that tells you in there where it was written, you know, cause I've seen that like on a picture that I've taken, somebody's taken my, I think it's XNDIF or some X if something like that. I'll look it up. That explains like where the file was taken. And to me, it would say Lil took that file. Anyway, I'm just saying.
You can see that by looking at a picture.
You can see that by looking at the properties of the file.
How do we know that she did that?
Well, that's my point. She should have done that.
Not necessarily. She's in the middle of her lesson. She's not going to take time to.
I said it was little.
Hold on, let me. Well, it's very little because, like, you've obviously never been in a classroom trying to manage kids, which I have.
Okay. And I was gonna say no. I have not, been a classroom.
You're not gonna take time to let me investigate who actually is the responsible party for this thing. You're gonna see so and so did it unfairly or not. I'm not saying that her issuing punishment at that moment in time is fair. I'm going to say she's not going to take the time out at that exact moment in time to investigate where this came from. And maybe, I mean, that happens. That's kind of school. It's like the kid who gets the note passed to them gets caught. That's the way it is. That's the whole point of this interchange.
And for that matter, why didn't Kima say, but Mrs. K, I didn't make that file.
Why would she? I mean, come on.
I don't know. I don't know. But anyway, that's it for my nose.
You can't apply that kind of logic to school children and school situations. That's just not.
I gave this a 9.75. So I ask you, are any of these nose very major to me? No. So let's move.
I understand that. I'm just
let's
saying.
Move on. So. Just to explain to people, we talked about this on the first episode of the Picard cast. Normally, in this section, you hear...
Hello, this is Captain Tilly. What the heck? Hell? What the hell? Hold your horses!
Well, for the Picard cast, you will instead hear...
Not good enough, damn it! Not good enough!
All right, so it's our not good enoughs. So... Fred's first, he says, still using books in the 23rd century? And yes, and 24th. But I wondered that myself, especially like I thought back to Context is for Kings from the first season of Discovery, where Tilly you know, notices that Burnham has that book, and she's like, oh, you have a book? Like, it's like this rare thing to have. So there's a whole library of books. I thought that was interesting. I don't know if we'd actually see that.
Well, but I can see that for a school or some other type of learning environment, not necessarily individuals. I could see individuals maybe not having books. Although, I mean, as you've seen in your own rewatch, Picard has books.
He certainly does, but he's Picard. He is.
Listeners, I am rolling my eyes right now.
So you should. Yes.
I can understand your pause at the using books because, yeah, I mean, we are kind of, books are becoming sort of relics.
Even today. Even
now. Even
like today right in 2020 reality, books are, I wouldn't say they're rare, but they're certainly not as commonplace as they were even 20 years ago.
I mean, I don't know if I would go that far because there are still plenty of people who enjoy the tactile sensation of reading a book.
Yeah.
So
it's not gone the way of the VHS tape.
No.
But maybe in
300 years.
Yeah. And there have been some advances like, you know, e-readers reading, you know, in a browser or even a phone where there are less books, like less, I wouldn't say less books, so less printed books than there is today.
There are certainly fewer brick and mortar bookstores.
Right.
So that is definitely an impact of electronic books. So I can see that books being less rare. However, I mean, my town's library just got rebuilt and there are still hundreds of books there. So that's why I say I can see an institution like a school or a library or a university or something like that, I can see them still preserving books. I just don't know about having individuals having books as often.
Mm-hmm. All right. Let's move on to James's not good enough.
All right. James says, who's this alien threat that's attacked interest are piqued?
Now, I talked to James after this and I told him, I'm like, you missed something. And he went back and did not realize at the time about the thing. And if you missed it, as I said, if you go back and watch the reports,
you have to look at the ticker.
You have to look at the ticker
because it's not just in the headline.
Right.
All I saw in the headline the first time I watched it was attack on Mars. And I was like, oh, Mars is attacked. Okay.
Yeah.
I did recognize those scenes from the trailer, though. From the Picard trailer. So I knew that it was significant in that way.
Right. But anyway, rogue synths are mentioned. So he didn't notice this. So I guess let's take a moment and talk about this. And I'm going to give you my theory. So we see in the trailer of Picard, there are a bunch of like data looking possibly androids. One of them is close to the camera and he has a tattoo on his forehead that says F8, which I assume is like fate, much like B4 and Lore and Data, this whimsical type of soon android name. So I am going to assume that they are the rogue synths, or at least they are synths. And what has happened is, if you recall from The Measure of a Man, the Next Generation episode, which I know, Ruthie, you just recently watched, Commander Maddox was, you know, trying to get Data to submit to some experiments. And, you know, it was a...
Well, he was trying to get Data ruled as property.
Ruled as property, yes. Because he wanted to build... essentially, potentially build an army of androids. And what I'm thinking happened, we don't know is that he got a hold of B4 and made his android army, and it is this android army that is attacking Bars. And I'm wondering if what we think we know, if Picard was in charge of an armada to save the Romulans from the supernova, I am wondering if Section 31 is involved in co-opting Maddox's research and maybe taking over the fleet. Who knows? Maybe Section 31 is trying to protect the Federation and is acting to destroy the Utopia Planitia shipyards to prevent them from saving all of Romulus, because they are looking at it that by saving Romulus, they and Romulans, they are kind of keeping a threat to the Federation going. And if falling short, they will only leave remnants of the Empire that will no longer be strong enough to continue. So
yeah,
that's what I'm wondering is happening. Now, we also know from the comic book, and we'll be hopefully talking about this at some point, but in the comic book, and this is a spoiler, in the comic book, we see Geordi LaForge is in charge of Utopia Planitia, and he's the one that is working on building the ships or building the fleet to go rescue the Romulans. So perhaps he may have been killed on Mars or on Utopia Planitia in this attack. So that is another layer of it. But I really wonder if this all plays into Picard's guilt for losing Geordi, for maybe them being able to get before to use to build rogue synths. We do not know yet, but I am curious.
Yeah.
My other theory is this admiral that Picard is talking to that we see in trailers. I'm wondering if this is, because we haven't actually seen her identified anywhere, I've been looking to see who this person is, and I haven't been able to find her in anything like an IMDb. I am really wondering if she is a placeholder and instead will be replaced by Admiral Janeway. Mm-hmm. Now, why they would do that, I don't know. But I'm telling you, I don't know this. And I know that there are some people that have seen that were at the time of this. This was recording this Wednesday, the 15th of January, and the premiere was on January 13th in LA, and was in, they saw the first three episodes, and they saw the first episode in London today, January 15th. I'm really wondering who this admiral is, because I have not seen her listed anywhere. So that's why I'm wondering if maybe she is a placeholder replaced by Admiral Janeway. So I do not know this for sure. In fact, this may be a way out theory. It is a way out theory, but I'm going to write it out and say it today. So I'm going to bring this into my hold your horses and the one where I must shut down nitpicking Brian, even though he wants to talk about the ships that are in the Utopia Planitia and how they are 23rd century ships. I say, hold your horses. No pun intended. Because think about it. We have the Miranda class. We have the Excelsior class. We have the Oberth class. They were all ships from the 23rd century. They are at the point of this 100 years old. Okay. So that those classes have been around. If they are trying to build an armada to rescue what we could potentially see as billions of Romulans. They are going to need every ship possible to rescue them. They are not going to have the time to build millions of ships. They are going to try to get every space-worthy ship they can find. They're going to pull ships out of mothballs, pull them out of stockyards, take decommissioned ships, take parts, and they are going to reassemble them. And so what I would suggest to those of you that had problems with those ships, and if you didn't recognize them, they were ships that were in Discovery. In fact, the one ship that we see very closely is a McGee class that is, of course, the same as the USS Shran. And from the previous, the Trouble with Edward short trek, that's similar to the USS Cabot that gets all the tribbles on it. So that's a McGee class. That was a McGee class we see in Space Dock. And I'm telling you, they wouldn't be able to make ships in time. They would have to take whatever they could get, fix them up, and get them out there. And that's what you see. And if you tell me, okay, what about the shuttles? What about the school bus that looked 23rd century? It's like, duh, of course it's 23rd century. It's probably built to last, number one. And number two, if it's just transporting people on Earth, if it's not going to like the next solar system, who the hell cares how old it is? It doesn't matter.
It still works.
It still works, right?
Yeah.
So I got to just, don't get your panties up in a bunch, people, you nitpickers out there. It's not worth it. Just you have to headcanon. I used to hate that word, but now I love it. I have to say, because to me, I saw this and yes, that bothered me at first, but I've got to say, I was able to come up with a pretty solid reason for it. And I also will say that, look, let's let the show stand on its own before you start, you know, throwing the YouTube haters at it for things like a ship. And let's also face it, it's a short trek. They're supposed to be low budget compared to the rest of the show.
Right.
They're not going to be able to design new ships just for a short trek. So anyway, just give it up. It's fine. It was a great short trek. Don't get all hung up over the fact that it wasn't like a brand new fancy ship. Okay.
I know. At some point in time, it's kind of like, well, damned if you do and damned if you don't. And like, people get upset because the technology and Discovery is so far advanced of the original series. But now they're getting upset because they're reusing the same design. Oh, come on now.
Yeah.
Which is it?
Yeah, and let's face it, it's people have that whole thing about Discovery, and I say this simply because there are some of you and I know that are listening to this that don't listen to us as part of Discovery and probably haven't given Discovery the time of day. Star Trek isn't made for you. Star Trek is made for people, okay? If you want Star Trek to grow, you can't expect 23rd century Star Trek to look like it was made in 1966. Get real. If you want the young people of the day to accept Star Trek, it should look futuristic. It shouldn't look retro futuristic.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's I'll get off my soapbox.
All right.
But like we said in episode one, give Discovery a chance. We think you'll really like it if you just give it a chance.
Yeah.
Especially if you just get to season two. Just make it that far. You'll trust us. All right. Do you have any other hold your horses? Or should I say not good enoughs?
Good enoughs. No, I don't think so.
All right. Let's move on to our regular feedback. We have Fred's feedback. Let's play it now.
Hello, Brian and Rusie, and all listeners to Talk Through Media. This is Fred from the Netherlands with some feedback for Star Trek Short Trek, Episode 10, aka Season 2, Episode 6, entitled Children of Mars. Oh man, I really want to be brought to school every day by such a school bus.
First off, I have one nitpick here. Am I cloning Brian here?
Well, of course, I'm a geneticist. I'm allowed to clone. We see that Kima is tripping Lil in the library, but Lil is studying a book there. Do they really still have books in the 23rd century? Come on. Or is that a kind of archaeological archive? This especially if you compare it to what kind of devices the teachers have and also what kind of translucent pads they have in the classroom, on which Lil is drawing Mrs. K, the teacher. And if I'm already talking about arbitrary names, being episode 10 or season 2 episode 6, is this a Star Trek Discovery short track? Is this a Star Trek Picard short track? Is this a Star Trek short track? Of course, we all know that this short track is tied into Star Trek Picard. But are we sure about that? Yes, there are articles all around. But imagine if you don't read these articles and don't know anything. All other short tracks were Star Trek Discovery short tracks, and then you get this one. Could it be tied in to Star Trek Discovery? Well, from the timeline, it couldn't, because we see here Picard as an admiral, and he is way beyond the time of Discovery, because Discovery is around the time of Pike and Kirk, etc. And Picard is, of course, 23rd century, much later. But since the Discovery went 1,000 years into the future, this episode still could tie into the Star Trek Discovery story as something that happened in the past of the new Star Trek Discovery 1,000 years ahead. What I expect is actually that we somehow will see these girls at an adult age. On the big screen at the end, we see Picard as an admiral. And we know from the trailers that at the start of the series, he is decommissioned. So it's at least a little later, but perhaps even quite a bit later. So that would mean that these girls are somewhat older. The other possibility, of course, is that the attack on Mars by Synth is the tie-in. And it has nothing to do with these girls. Okay, time's up more or less. That was all for now. Tonight there is a call-in show for Talk Through Media. Actually, I have another invitation as a guest on a podcast at exactly the same time. It's not that I'm so popular that I have requests every day, but now I have two requests exactly on the same date at the same time, being 2 p.m. EST. So perhaps I should clone myself instead of cloning Nitpicky Brian. Greet Fred from the Netherlands.
That's hilarious. Don't clone yourself. Haven't you ever seen Duplicity?
Well, to that end, friend, I have to say thank you so much again for your feedback, as usual. And thank you again for... brought in Nitpicky Brian, even though I didn't.
Okay. Oh, goodness.
I wanted to mention and just to follow up. Yes, in fact, we had our very first Patreon call-in show last Saturday, the 11th of January, and that is for Patreon supporters only. If you are a Patreon supporter, that would be in your RSS feed, or if you log into your Patreon account, you'll find the audio there. That's probably the first of many Patreon episodes that we're going to be doing. I think the call-in show was a resounding success, so I think we'll probably be doing it again very soon. I think I don't want to commit to doing the monthly, but I think we're certainly going to be doing another one pretty soon. Wouldn't you say?
Sure. Why not?
Yeah. So we'll probably do one in February, but we'll time and place and actual schedule for that is to be determined. But regardless, we're going to have some more exclusive Patreon content for sure. And I'll just give in the plug right now, patreon.com/Brian and Ruthie. And you should see a link in the episode to take you to the Patreon. So you get access to these starting at $1 per month. And we have additional tiers beyond that, $5, $10, $15, $20, and you get more perks along the way. And some of those Patreon supporters will actually be in our next roundtable show, which will actually be available to everyone. But their participation is part of that. So they're going to be joining us for our next episode here, where we'll be talking about Picard. So
Fred also pointed out that there's an article that he shared in Facebook. And he said it's only in this article that he understood that the girls were living on Earth and their parents were working on Mars. So because of the title of the episode and the space dock, where he assumed the parents were working, I thought they were on Mars. Silly, of course, because Mars has no atmosphere. But obviously somebody's working / living on Mars, so there's that. So I can understand the confusion, but I'm glad that it was cleared up for you, Fred. So did you have anything to say about his voicemail?
We are considering this a Picard short trek. The other thing, I wonder about there being an older Lil and Kima in Picard. I don't know if those characters actually exist in this, but I wouldn't be surprised to see them. So we'll see.
Okay. Okay. LT from NC says, so much to unpack with this one. It was, as a whole, one of the best short treks from a dramatic point of view, in my opinion. They did a good job showing the building tension between the girls leading up to the fight. But the kicker was when the message of the attack came through. It reminded me of the day of the Challenger accident. I was in college at the time, and I saw the explosion live on TV in my dorm room. All of us were shocked at what had happened, and the air on campus was one of subdued shock. I know some folks have mentioned 9/11, and that was a different experience for me. I was on family leave at the time since my daughter had just been born 10 days before, so I didn't get the same group shock that I would have if I had been on duty, which I would have been shift-wise. Back to the short. The big clues were in the fine details. It took a couple of watches and some very quick pauses to see the captions on the screen. We know now that Mars was attacked, as a few pundits had speculated, and we know who did it, the rogue synths. This opens a Costco-sized can of worms as to why and how it ties into all the other teasers we've gotten so far and the plot nuggets laid out in the comics. I know Brother James may hit on it, but I am going to toss out another set of the same thoughts about a topic that everyone in the punditry posse have been writhing about. I don't know if he meant writhing or writing, but anyway. I didn't object to the school bus shuttle being the shuttle we've seen in Discovery. Just to nudge that dead horse one more time, the designs of utility vehicles don't always progress as time passes past a certain point. There are trucks in the U.S. military inventory that look just like the ones that went to World War II and Korea. There are newer ones, sure, but some things don't change that radically. Up until just a few years ago, there were several places in the U.S. that were chock full of old cargo ships and old warships in the mothball fleet, standing by for reactivation should the need arise. We know that the Romulan evacuation was going to require a huge number of ships, so seeing old ships pressed back into service would not be a mind-blowing thing if you take a minute to think about how long it might take to make a ship from scratch. From a practical making TV aspect, the same shuttle was used in the motion picture all the way through all the movies, even into Next Gen and the follow-on series. It was because they used the same shooting models, albeit with a few modifications. Looking at it today, they used some of the same 3D models. Given the amount of time it takes to make a good 3D wireframe model, deadlines, etc., it's a production necessity to reuse some of the stuff they already had. I'm sorry, yep. But of all the things I'm feeling picky about, that is not it. Then again, yep. I'm not making a living off of monetized YouTube. Burn.
Oh, LT, you and I are two peas in a pod on this. I totally agree with you here.
Yeah.
Totally.
We also know that this attack happened on April 5th, First Contact Day. I wonder if that will be a plot point once Picard hits. Did anyone ever find out the name of the school officially?
We know it's WSA, and I wonder if it's William Shatner Academy?
Perhaps. LT says it reminded me of the day of the Challenger accident. That's what I felt as well. I know you got 9/11 vibes. I sort of was getting Challenger accident vibes because I was in school. I was in grade school at the time that that happened. And so I agree with you, LT. It was also more like the Challenger incident to me because I was also probably closer to their age than your age at the time that that happened. Not to make you feel old or anything. Sorry. I mean, I'm over 40 after all, so come on now. But anyway,
yeah.
Yeah, it was in, so that was in 1986. I was 10. And yeah, that's kind of how I felt watching that on TV. And just, I mean, the total shock of the situation. And our gym teacher was a finalist to be in the Challenger, but obviously was not.
Oh,
I mean,
wow.
I don't know if that's obvious, but she wasn't in there. So it kind of hit a little close to home for us in that respect. So it was not, I mean, it was, she it was would crazy. Have been in,
she would have been in Chris McAuliffe's spot.
Yeah, she was she one of the finalists, I guess, for that. But she got beat out by her. So, she was not in the Challenger, in other words. But yeah. It was crazy. And I mean, we pretty much watched it on TV and watched the explosion on TV. And it was kind of like, whoa. So it was pretty crazy. So, yeah.
As far as the date, we know it's around April 5th. And okay. So we know it's First Contact Day. In Star Trek First Contact was given as April 5th, 2063. That's when the Cochrane warp vehicle, whatever, was first traveled by warp, and the Vulcans spot his craft, and they make first contact with the Earthlings. So we know that was April 5th, 2063. So the question is this April 5th, 2385, or 2386? Okay. It is definitely not April 5th, 2385, because that is a Sunday. Okay. And we see these scenes, especially with Lil's father, where he says he can't make it. So I'm going to contend that would normally not be something that we would get the day of. So, and because it's a school day, I'm thinking it's either Thursday or Friday. So I'm going to say Friday. Could be Thursday, but let's say it is Friday. It is either April 3rd, 2385. And if it's 2386, April 5th is on a Monday, so I'm assuming that if they're making such a big thing about, you know, coming home for it, it's a holiday and not a school day. So that's why I'm thinking they have the day off. So this would be Friday, April 2nd, 2386. So that's my take on it.
Okay. Okay. Rick from Cleveland says, the teen drama between the two girls was very timeless, and watching their struggle unfold, you could see this same thing in any middle school. I agree. I thought the use of music was powerful, and it had a similar feel for me of the opening moments of Star Trek Into Darkness before the bomb went off in London.
Yeah.
The one no for me was before the shuttle takes off when Kima has to pick up her backpack. The way it's filmed, it does not appear the contents spilled. How long does it take to pick up a backpack?
Exactly.
Okay. Well, let's let the impetus be. On to the climax. What the heck hell is a rogue synth? I'm sorry. He said, what the heck hell is a rogue synth? That suggests to me that an antagonist in the Picard series may be some sentient androids. While obviously the Borg and Romulans factor into the show, maybe neither on their own is the enemy in Picard. It also suggests callbacks to plot lines and themes from fantastic TNG episodes like Measure of a Man, I, Borg, and others that dealt with the individual rights. Perhaps a very interesting dialogue, very relevant to today's social issues. Whether we see these characters again or not, this short trek got me even more excited for the possibilities in Picard. I agree, Rick. I think that you are spot on. And I don't know what the heck hell a rogue synth is, but I'm sure we're going to find out.
Yep. All right. And with that, unfortunately, Ruthie has to go.
Oh, you're going to say that? You're not going to
say that? I was thinking about it, and I think it will play better if we just fess up that you have to leave and
okay,
let it go longer. I'll just read the rest, and I think that'll work better.
All right.
Yeah. Okay, and the rest is going to be me. So this is going to be the Brian show for the rest of this. We have Clint from Indianapolis. He says, I like the style of this short trek as a one-off production, but I would not want a bunch of episodes or shorts in this non-dialogue style. The cover of Heroes works well with the scenes. Yes, I agree with that. We also had feedback from James, the Augmented Sailor. He said, this short pulls no punches and had my emotions up, not only for the Picard show, but for these two girls, starting off as enemies and being brought together through horrific circumstances. The way this was put together is amazing, with virtually no dialogue, but conveyed so much with so little. As I write this, I can't help but think if it actually was longer, would have had the same impact. I'm leaving my no as it is because I want Picard to start now. But otherwise, the short is perfect in length and every other aspect. I initially gave it a 9.5, but then updated it to a 10 as things sunk in. I'm literally on the verge of tears right now and rewatched it while I wrote this. It's just amazing. As far as my other notes, one thing I had noticed is that the Vulcan principal in the short trek, who he actually doesn't have any lines, but you know, we certainly see him doing stuff, was played by Robert Verlach, who also played Eridar, who was Saru's father in last season's short trek, The Brightest Star. So let's move on to our shipwide announcements. Well, the first thing that I want to say is that Star Trek Picard has been renewed for season 2. And we know this. This was originally, there was like a tax credit that we had gotten an indication that had been renewed. But as of this weekend at the TCAs in Los Angeles, it was officially renewed for season 2. So, and there has been some discussion that even season 3 has been renewed, or at least will be going forward. One thing that has been announced is that Terry Matalas, I think, or Matalas, you may know him from 12 Monkeys. He was the executive producer, showrunner for 12 Monkeys. But he's also got some Star Trek cred. He was on staff as, I believe, Brennan Braga's assistant during Voyager Times and Enterprise, and had later written, had some some screen credits for writing on Enterprise. So, you know, he's got some Star Trek credit. He is coming on. I had heard that he may have been on staff in season one of Picard, but certainly for season two, he has been promoted to executive producer and has reportedly been announced as the showrunner for season two. Michael Chabon, who is the showrunner for season one, has been announced that he will step down from showrunning. He's still going to be an executive producer. And of course, he is one of the co-creators of Star Trek Picard, but he is leaving showrunning duties to team up, I believe, Showtime, which is another CBS property. The Showtime premium channel is going to be doing the Adventures of Cavalier and Clay, which, if you don't know it, that is the book that Chabon won the Pulitzer Prize for. So apparently they're going to adapt it into a series. So he is leaving to do that. We wish him well. And he's still going to be involved, I guess, on Picard, but he's going to be moving on to that. So we wish him well. Supposedly, they are actively working on the Section 31 series. There's a writer's room that has been assembled, and already some staff has started to move over from Discovery and working on the Section 31 series. There has been some inkling that, according to Production Weekly, that Star Trek Discovery has been... There's already work on season four of Discovery, but I'm really wondering if this is actually Section 31 and it's misnamed by Production Weekly or miscategorized. So that's possible. But supposedly, also over the weekend, Kurtzman indicated that there are two other shows in the works, two other live action shows in the works. So one of them has to be Pike. I don't have any, you know, hard and fast news to tell you that Pike Spock number one series has been officially announced, but we have to think that this is one of those two. The other one, two of the things that have been mentioned in the past has been a Starfleet Academy series, and there were a couple of producers that were attributed to that worked on Runaways, Stephanie Savage and Josh Schwartz. And supposedly, yeah, Runaways just released its third and final season, so it's possible now that they are actively working on the Starfleet Academy series. And then the other thing, but we don't know for sure, but that's one that we could suppose. The other possibility is Nicholas Meyer had written a treatment for a Khan, like, limited series. So perhaps it's that. If I had to guess, though, based on timing and that, I'm thinking it's the Starfleet Academy series. So, and again, this doesn't include the Section 31 series. It doesn't include Short Treks, and it doesn't include the Nickelodeon animated series, which is also underway. So this is the time to be a Star Trek fan. That's all I have to say. This year and next year, we are going to see a lot of new Trek. There was an article from Saturday and was in TVLine.com. Kurtzman was asked about Worf and whether or not he would be appearing in Picard. And Kurtzman responded to say that if Worf returned to Star Trek, he would appear like Worf. What he said is, I'll quote him, he says, "It's totally possible. I think Worf is such an amazing character. We didn't want to just throw people in because they were in Next Gen. We actually weren't thinking about bringing Marina and Jonathan back until halfway through the season when, as we were breaking story, something came up that made it very clear that they need to be in the story." So a deliberate reason is the bar, and if there's a great reason to bring Worf in, anything is possible. So he said, the question was, so will Worf's look on Picard more closely resemble Discovery's Klingons then? He said, no, he's got to look the same. We're not changing that. It's funny because you'll see by the time you get to Picard's third episode, this is a spoiler, this next part, there are different kinds of Romulans that look different depending on their territories. You'll see some Romulans that are just about the ears. You'll see some with the ears and deeper ridges in their foreheads. So I have to believe there are different iterations of Klingons depending on where they are from. And someone, it mentions in the article, to be fair, Discovery did soften the look of the Klingons in season two as well. And the season two Klingons that we see look more like Worf. Where they don't look as much like Worf are there are like prosthetics on the necks of the Klingons, as well as the like fingers and fingertips and hands. They look quite a bit different. They look more alien than the Worf's hands did. But, you know, it's like dogs, I always say. Like dogs. There are so many different breeds of dogs, and yet they're all the same species. They just look so much different because of, you know, hundreds of years of breeding. So it stands to reason. And there, you know, there's different skinned Romulans, supposedly. We've seen, you know, they relate to Vulcans, of course, and we've seen black Vulcans with Tuvok. We've seen Asian Romulans, Asian looking Romulans, I should say, from Star Trek V. And so it makes sense that we would see this kind of thing. They're not all homogeneous looking. All right. And the last thing, I was hoping, you know, that I was going to be able to get Ruthie's take on these, but we didn't want to hold up this episode too much longer because we got a lot of content in store for you in the next week or so. We've had several deaths in the Star Trek universe. I'll start with Robert Walker Jr., who played Charlie X. He passed away recently. Sid Mead, who was a designer. I believe his work was seen in Star Trek The Motion Picture. He died over the holidays. But the three that are probably most well-known and most like long-lasting, of course, Aaron Eisenberg, he died a few months ago, and we really haven't had a chance to talk about it. Of course, he was known for playing Nog. He died recently. He collapsed. You know, he had had kidney problems for, you know, he had had a kidney transplant, and I believe just like 3 years ago or so, he had to have another kidney transplant, and supposedly something happened regarding to that, I believe, but he lost consciousness and he did not come back. Very sad to see him die. Like he was only 50, a younger guy than me at this point, died too soon. And yeah, I never met him. I had followed him on Twitter and watched him recently. Like he and Kira Lofton do a YouTube podcast or whatever you want to call it, but they do a YouTube have a YouTube channel called The Seventh Rule. That's still going on right now, but Kirok was doing it with Aaron. And the passion that he had for Star Trek and for his role, and you can see him talking about it on the What We Left Behind, the recent Deep Space Nine documentary, which we still haven't had a chance to talk about, Ruthie and I. It's very evident how much he loved the fans and how much he loved the role, and everything I've heard about the guy said, you know, what a great guy he was. So his loss is very sad. We also had DC Fontana died recently. She died in December, aged 80, and I guess she had had a brief short illness, but she is best known as being there from the very beginning of the original series. She was very instrumental in developing Spock, Amok Time, Journey to Babel. She wrote many episodes of the original series and was involved in the creation of The Next Generation. She left halfway through season one of Next Gen, but she was heavily involved at the start. The other thing that she was involved with was the, she was effectively, they didn't call it that back then, but in the 70s, the animated series. So tragic loss, of course. You know, she had a long career, had been involved in many shows, $6 Million Man, Buck Rogers, several shows. I'd have to go back and look at her IMDb, but a long, long, long list of credits to her name. And she had also been a teacher and had been teaching the art of, you know, screenwriting to, you know, students for many years. And I had heard her on Larry Nemechek's Trek Files several times in the last, you know, couple of years. And anyway, it's sad to see her go. But the one I really want to talk about is Renee Auberjonois, who, of course, played Odo. And I have mentioned it on this podcast, but, you know, I was one of the ones who had submitted stories to Star Trek in the 90s, and the story that was bought by Star Trek and turned into, they basically took my, you will not see my name on the credits. Okay, so just stop you right there. You won't see my name, but George Brozak's story for Broken Link was combined with an idea that I had, which was Odo gets sick, and the only way that they can cure him is to take him to the Founders. And that part of the story was combined with his part of the story, which was Odo, you know, has to go to the Founders to be judged, and Gowron is changeling, which doesn't turn out to be Gowron. Spoiler alert. But anyway, that was a big part of my story. So Odo was a very special character for me. I loved his character probably as much, maybe more than any character from Deep Space Nine. And of course, he had had a long career, many different character roles. You know, he'd also, you know, done a lot of on Broadway. He had been in The Little Mermaid, singing for that. You may know him from Benson. He was Colonel West in Star Trek VI. Most of his, or maybe all of his scenes were cut, but I know in the extended, he's in there. He had also been in Enterprise, guesting on that as another character, of course. Very sorry to see him go. He was a credit to Star Trek and a great actor. And he died of complications from lung cancer. He was 79. So sorry to see him go as well. All right. So that's it for this episode. And I'm just going to read all this myself. To submit your theories and feedback, go to talkthroughmedia.com/feedback, where you can submit text or audio. You can call our voicemail, which is 216-232-6146. Our email address for the Picard Cast is picardcast@talkthroughmedia.com. The best way to submit your feedback is to use the Facebook group. And if you're not a member, please sign up. It only takes you a minute. We will ask you a basic question about Star Trek just to make sure that you are real. But it is at facebook.com/group/StarTrekTTM podcasts. That's the Star Trek Talk Through Media podcasts. If you search for us on Facebook, you'll find us there. We also have for the network, our network Facebook page, which is at facebook.com/talkthroughmedia. There you can submit a review. And I would also, if you're a member of it, and if you're not, I would like to encourage you to join Podchaser, because there you can submit a review for us. So help us out by getting us more exposure by writing us a review. Our Twitter for this podcast is PicardCast, and for both this and for Discovery, it is Star Trek TTM. A great way to support us is by sharing our content that's on Twitter and Facebook. The ones that come through the Facebook group can't be shared because we're a private group, but if we'll post our most important stuff on the Talk Through Media Facebook page, and those can be shared. So we'd appreciate it if you could share anything we post there, and especially share our content that's on Twitter. You can subscribe to us in Apple Podcasts or the podcast client of your choice. As we mentioned at the beginning of this, the Star Trek Picard cast content will be both on the Star Trek Discovery podcast feed. So if you're already subscribed to that, you can stay subscribed to that and you'll get these. But if you want to stick to just Picard, there is also the Star Trek Picard cast, and you can get links to that in the blog post. So as to our RSS feeds, and most podcast clients will just let you add that. And then once you do that, subscribe to us. That way you will get new episodes when they come out. If you're on Apple Podcasts, we would really appreciate a rating or review in either podcast. I would also bring up again our Patreon, which is at patreon.com/Brian and Ruthie. And with that, we would like to thank our Patreon subscribers, Clint McCollum, Fred Petrie, James Robbins, Kim Vogel, Kyle McAdams, and Lawrence Todd. And you can also hear me on the Walking Dead Talkthrough. And if you want to get all of the podcasts on the Talkthrough Media feed, you can use the all-inclusive feed that will give you access to everything. Our next episode, we are doing a roundtable that will come out before the first episode of Star Trek Picard is released. And the topic of that is going to start with the Patreon LT from NC. He gave us a topic to consider for an episode, and we decided to use that for our roundtable. And the topic is, what makes Picard such a compelling character? And we will start with that, and we will move on to Picard as a show in general and get our impressions prior to the start of the series. And we have some returning people from past roundtables, and we have some new people that are going to be joining us this time. So I don't want to give all of that out, but we'll be recording that show. So with that, I'm Brian. And if Ruthie was here, she would say, I'm Ruthie. And I'll just say it for peace and long life. Live long and prosper.